interested in coffee, we brought gear so we could brew you a cup.
Yeah, if you want to.
Cool. We grind it fresh, so it takes like 2 minutes.
That's fine.
We go to like a lot of trouble sourcing and getting single origin coffee, and so we want it to get to the customer brewed well, just like the farmers spent so much time processing and picking precision. So this is part of that. I find it makes a big difference in the flavor profile of the coffee. I'm serious now.
You don't have to be serious. Welcome to Tri-Town Advice Givers Podcast, a podcast dedicated to bringing the Tri-Town and surrounding area residents the best advice from our brightest minds. My name is Mark Borst, your host, and today we're at the Tri-Town Advice Givers Studio in St. John, Indiana, talking with Annette McEwen and Elizabeth Steele from Small Town Coffee. All right. Hi, ladies, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Let's go ahead and start, and just let's tell us a little bit about each of you, and then how you guys are friends, or how you know each other, how that whole relationship came to be.
I never said I was your friend.
Here we go. Okay, you go first.
So I'm from Highland. Kind of moved around a lot, but made Highland my home. Graduated from high school in Highland. Annette and I met at one of my many times of living here and moving back. It was about, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah.
We both enjoyed coffee at that point, didn't really think much of it until a couple of years ago when we were actually on a camping trip and we're like, hey, why don't we do this? We both love coffee.
We're not doing anything else.
Yeah, we've got nothing better to do. I think it had been something that was in the back of both of our minds to do, but it was one of those things, it's like, well, if there weren't better things to do, then I'd start a coffee business.
Yeah. It was my first job working at a coffee shop. I was 16, so my very first job, I was a barista.
A
small mom and pop shop in Delafield, Wisconsin.
Okay.
They had some experience as a bakery and also had added the coffee component and received some training in Europe. So they were pretty precise about what they were doing. So at 16, I got a good education and then moved in and out of a couple different professions. But through all of that, worked at different coffee shops.
So you said Wisconsin, not from here originally?
Originally, I'm from a really tiny town in Illinois.
Okay.
I lived for like 4 years in a place called Dehinda. The population is 50.
I have never heard of that, and I actually went to school in Central Illinois, Illinois State. So.
Nice. Cool. My grandparents are from the big town of Williamsfield. There's 500 people there.
Huge.
And then grew up mostly in Wisconsin. I moved out here after college because I had a bunch of friends and... a friend introduced me to Elizabeth, and she needed to use my French press, conveniently enough. So one of our first conversations was probably about coffee.
Probably.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's roll into Small Town Coffee.
Mm-hmm.
How long has it been going?
Officially since November.
Okay.
It probably took...
It was October.
October.
Yeah.
It took, it probably took Elizabeth like 6 months to talk me into the idea.
Talk you into the business aspect?
Yeah, business aspect. I'm like, okay. I know we could do this really well, but like there's a lot of risk involved, you know, so it's something to really consider before you leap in.
What was that driving factor that you pushed her over the edge on?
That's a good question.
I think it's...
You can answer.
I think... Elizabeth always says, I can do anything I want. And that became, look.
It's true.
We can do anything we want. Like, we're good at this. Let's just go for it. I think she just said it enough times where I was like, yeah,
she just beat you down.
You know.
Yeah.
We can do it.
I think, too, we've both lived in a lot of different places. And when we were actually talking about this, we were living in separate states, I think, even at that point.
Yeah.
And the idea of coming back here where we both had community.
Yeah.
We're like, let's go do it where we have community, where we know people, where we have the support. Just of friends, but then also of other business people, because we know business people in the community as well. So it was like, let's take this jump, let's take this risk, but in an area that we know.
Get a little bit of a safety net, some support. Yeah.
So
people with good counsel.
Yeah.
And any business, it's about relationships. So
yeah.
Where you already have the relationship, it is an easier risk. Yeah. Always a risk, but it is easier.
Yeah.
So as far as the business side of it, was there any, it's always been about coffee, like, and the business part of it just came together?
Yeah. It's always been about coffee and people.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we both love coffee. We love really good coffee. We love all the elements about coffee. It's just such a fun product, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, I think it's about connecting with people, and we know coffee is such a great connector. Mm-hmm. People are already having conversations over coffee, so
why not make it great coffee?
Yeah, jump in where people are already connecting and make it even better.
So what's the learning curve teaching the people that they can have a better cup of coffee?
You just got to taste it.
Yeah, okay.
And then just come in and talk to us about our sourcing practices, where the coffee came from, you know, traceability. We know all of that. What price a farmer was paid for their coffee. The relationship aspect of coffee is important to us here at home, but also our international connections.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's just walk us through that. So we're in Indiana. We're in the middle of the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
So the coffee's a long way away from here.
It is.
So how do you guys find the sourcing? How do you guys do the research?
Yeah, so I have a little experience roasting up in Michigan, actually. And through there, kind of learn the process of how we actually get coffee here. We are working with mainly two importers that, one, we just trust their practice as a whole. Mm-hmm. As a company, their goal is to work with farmers who are doing things sustainably, responsibly. They're engaging with their farmers on like weekly basis, you know, like they've got people in country who are, they're working together with the farmers. So there actually is relationship there. They do have some stuff that's certified organic. Not all of it is, but because we trust their practices as a whole, we know they're
sourcing things
that they're sourcing things that are actually cared for.
I think I've spent a few years working in organic farms, actually, so just starting to understand a little bit of that certification process and some of the hoops that a farmer might have to jump through to get there. Working with this specific importer, we don't miss out on great coffee that might not yet be certified, if that makes sense.
So certification process in other countries similar to the U.S. or is it different?
Yeah, it's similar. I think even just the cost of getting into that, paying for certification for a really small farmer, it's just not a realistic thing.
Right.
But as we buy into their quality practices and support them by purchasing their exceptional coffee, it increases, you know, the chance that they'll be able to take that leap.
Mm-hmm. Pesticides and other things used as highly outside of the U.S. as they are inside of the U.S. on a normal practice?
They are. Yeah. I mean, coffee's one of the most, is it the most sprayed?
One of the most, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And there's good reason for that. I mean, there's one farmer we talked to who, where was this at? Was it
Costa Rica?
Costa Rica. She said if they stopped spraying, they would lose their crop in less than a month due to rust.
Okay.
It's a fungus that grows on the trees.
So it's not just something you can kind of like, well, I'm going to be organic and just stop spraying.
Right.
Like, there's a lot that goes into that transition. And it depends on where the coffee comes from. Like rust is a huge issue, you know, let's say in Costa Rica. But there might be other areas of the world where there's a different problem.
So have you guys had a chance to go to any of the farms yet?
No, but it's on It's in the business plan. We're
That's
one of the cool. long-term goals.
Is yeah. to be. I guess being only open a few months. You know? Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, as far as the sourcing, you said it's just one middleman right now, or multiple?
So we have a couple different importers.
Okay.
The one that we were just talking about, they're basically the one middleman. Yeah. If we, they're sourcing it. They're picking the coffees they want to sell, and we're buying it from them.
Yeah.
Depending on what importer you work with, there can be a couple. There can be the exporting side. There can be the importing side. It can get a little complicated. A couple
different transitions the coffee goes through. But
okay.
Yes, yeah. But this company does.
Called Genuine Origin.
Yeah.
So from the time they're picked to the time they are here, are they roasted there or here?
Well, that wouldn't be very fun. We wouldn't have a job.
Okay.
So usually we call it at origin or in origin. At origin, they're obviously grown, dried, processed, milled, packaged, and all of that. That's like, we could talk for hours just about each one of those processes.
Right.
And even how it affects the taste of your cup of coffee every morning, you know. So all of that usually happens in country. And then it's exported, brought into the States.
There might be some roasting there just to do like a sample batch to kind of see how the coffee's flavor profile develops as it's roasted. And more farms, I feel like, are getting into roasting there, which is actually a really great thing. I learned over the past few years that a lot of folks in country don't actually ever drink their coffee. You know, so, just.
And is that out of, for what reason? Do you know?
I think there are probably a couple reasons.
I think some of it is just, one, there wasn't much access to
roasting.
To the knowledge of roasting it.
Okay.
I mean, all you need is a pan and a heat source to roast, so which all countries have that. So but just what you're doing with it. So I guess most of it would be knowledge.
The knowledge of roasting, but also like time and actually understanding the value of what they have. Like sometimes I don't know, here farming anyway, sometimes it's just what your family does. You know?
Right.
Just, we grow coffee, you know?
Right.
But now actually becoming part of the whole experience with importers like Genuine Origin, I think they're trying to bridge the gap, you know, help us understand the farmer's end of things and to also help the farmer understand how amazing their product really is, especially if they take time in all of those steps and how it affects the outcome at the end, you know.
Right.
Because if they're not roasting it or tasting it, they're like, "What? Why?"
So they don't. Right. So they're actually learning the difference of what it should taste like versus what it actually does.
Yeah.
Okay. And the roasting is done here then. And something you said a while ago, single estate, all of your stuff, or.
Not necessarily single estate.
Okay.
But we are doing single origin right now.
Okay.
Which means single country.
Okay.
So like this bag right here.
Or even single region.
Yeah. It can get a little complicated. There's the country. So this is a Brazilian country.
Good job.
This is a Brazilian coffee. And then you can get as specific as the region, the farmer, the farm it was grown on.
How it was processed.
Yeah. Single estate usually means it's coming from one farm. And then there's most coffees coming from co-ops, though. And so, like, all the farmers in this region bring all their coffee together, and it gets all processed together. And then, so that's usually, they'll be region specific. And then sometimes it's just Brazilian and you're not even sure what region or
part.
So from pick time to when it actually gets to you guys, what's the time frame generally?
From picked. maybe 6 months or so.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a process.
It is a process. Yeah.
Okay.
It's all shipped on shipping containers. So the whole process of getting coffee exported, and then, I mean, sometimes it can take 3 months to get just on the ship from, like, this one, Brazil, up to here, you know?
Okay.
And then sometimes it sits in customs for a month or two, you know?
So the first thing we do when we get the coffee is we do a coffee cupping. So we'll take a small sample of the coffee, roast it, and taste it. Just because it's gone through so much. So let's say it was this amazing coffee that we heard about. By the time it gets to us, we want to know, A, is it as amazing they said, and is it still amazing?
Yeah.
Right.
Or has it, you know, hung out on a in customs for too long? And
so what happens if you don't like it when you get it?
It depends on the importer you're working with. Yeah. Okay. A lot of times, before we actually order a large amount, we'll just get a sample from our importer, and we'll roast that up and test it. And then we're like, okay, we actually like this coffee, and we'll order. Right now, we're only ordering about a bag at a time. But we'll order a whole bag. And then we'll do another sample roast when we get it.
Yeah, and then we would just reach out to our importer and let them know what happened. You know, it's it's not something that happens very often, but it does happen. So there's kind of processes and things for that.
So just on the process of how the coffee industry works, pay up front, pay on delivery, pay 30 days.
A little bit of it all.
Okay.
Yeah. The one we're working with, primarily, we pay when we order, so we pay up front.
Yeah.
I have worked with some where we pay 30, 60 days out as well.
Okay. So it's really dependent.
Yeah.
Okay. Take me through the process once you guys get it here, like to bag it, sell it. Like, how does it get all that done?
After the sample roasting, Elizabeth is a primary roaster. She has the most experience there. So she'll take it and roast a batch in our Dietrich IR5, which is, we've had all rolling for a whole week already. And while she's doing all of that, I'm working on labeling, packaging, marketing, and sales. And we are pretty much roast to order right now. So we're roasting based on what's in demand. We have a couple different markets we're at. We're at Homewood and also at the Highland Market. So we'll roast enough for that, and then as well as any wholesale orders we have, and bag it and deliver it.
Mm-hmm. So roast to order, so you're not having any, you shouldn't have any quality issues from when you bag it to going out the door, because you're really not doing inventory.
We'll do a little extra just so we have some on hand, but the IR5, the 5 means it's a 5-kilo roaster, which is 11 pounds. So we're only roasting 11 pounds per batch.
Yep. And we want it to be really fresh when it gets to the customer, so there's not really any reason for us to roast in excess. Mm-hmm.
So if I open this bag, a whole bean?
It is.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. And why don't you just go through the difference for people of what the whole bean is versus the ground and why and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So let's see. Coffee is it's a seed of a plant, a seed of a fruit. And it has all these delicious oils and flavors locked up inside it. And if you beat it up by grinding it and then leave it sit in your refrigerator on the counter for a week or a month or who knows how long it's been in the...
Or even half an hour.
Yeah, or even half an hour. You lose all of that amazing flavor that farmers and roasters and importers have worked so hard to store up in there. It starts to break down within seconds, really, of grinding. So if you really twist our arm and like kind of just look really sad about it, we'll consider grinding it for you.
Annette will, I won't.
we always just try to encourage people even just to start with a real cheap blade grinder or your food processor or something. Although the step after that is to get a burr grinder. That's really where it's at. Consistent particle size. So you got these two gears that are spaced apart from each other, and they crush the bean versus you know, chop it.
Gotcha. So. And you mentioned earlier that different size granules do different things. Mm-hmm. So how do people know all that? Is that getting like too detailed for the average person or?
No, it's not complicated. It's, no. Yeah.
It's basically just dependent on your brewing method.
Yeah.
Different methods have different filters, and those filters have a different porous size.
Okay.
Is that what I want to say?
Sure.
I'll go with that. So some filters are finer than others. And so the finer your filter is, you're usually going to have to use a coarser... No, sorry. The finer your coffee. Well, again, it kind of depends on your brewing method.
Wait, let me explain this.
All right, I'll stick to roasting and stick to brewing.
So if you've got a really fine filter, like let's say with the V60 pour over, you could use a fine grind size. Whereas if you've got a pretty large filter, like or a metal filter, like with the French press, you want a coarser grind on your coffee. Otherwise, your coffee's gonna be muddy, and maybe you like that, you know. But
right.
So usually with a paper filter, you want a finer grind, and with a metal filter, you want a coarser grind.
Okay. It's really that simple. So is it just about the brewing method, or is it about the flavor that comes out?
Both. The brewing method can really affect the flavor that comes out. We find with the V60, at least personally, I really like that for a more delicate coffee because you're using a real fine grind, and it does a great job of bringing those flavors to the surface. Whereas with the French press, you're getting a more full-bodied coffee, which pairs really nicely with a chocolatey or nutty, maybe a more bold coffee. So
just on that yeah. sounds a lot like wine, like
yeah.
the description of wine and stuff.
Absolutely.
So how long or how hard is it to explain to people that coffee, the flavor and all that stuff is important versus 30 years ago, grabbing the Folgers can out of the cupboard and putting it in a pot of coffee? Like, it's got to be a learning curve for people.
Yeah. It definitely is, I think. I mean, even for me, the process I went through to actually learn about coffee.
It's a journey.
Yeah, it's a journey. It's a
and
fun
it's different
one, though.
For everyone. Yeah, it is really fun.
But we actually do describe it or explain it in comparison to wine and even the craft beer industry. There's actually more potential for flavor in coffee than there is in wine, which a lot of people don't know. So you tell them there's flavor in coffee, and they're like, really? Like, yeah. I thought it just tasted like coffee.
Yeah.
You know? You're like, no, you can taste blueberries in coffee. You can taste nuts in coffee,
chocolate,
like pecans. You can taste
raspberry, tobacco.
Yeah, there's all sorts of flavors that come out.
And is
coffee.
That from the bean that's growing in it? There's nothing added to it,
right.
what
nothing
you're talking
added
about.
To it. So,
right.
Yes, don't ask us how we got our blueberries in our coffee.
Yeah, well, we didn't put blueberries in there. It's based on where it's coming from, the country of origin. It's based on how it was grown. A lot of it's based on how it was processed or mm-hmm. dried. There's a couple different ways of drying the beans that really affect the flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also depends on how you roast it. So there's a lot of factors that go into actually what you're tasting in your cup.
So the same bean from the same or the a similar bean from the same farm, you mm-hmm. could get multiple flavors out of. Is that what you're
could.
Saying?
You,
based
yeah,
on
so
processes.
You have one farm. You could take that coffee and dry it three different ways, and it would change how that tastes in the end.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So it makes it fun, you know, like it's not just this simple, straightforward process and you just do everything the same all the time, you know.
Mm-hmm. So then that goes back to your source, that mm-hmm. someone actually being on the ground and being able to test stuff and is so important.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. That's very interesting. I didn't realize how complex coffee was.
Yeah. And all that to say, we still appreciate just a good solid cup of coffee. Like, you don't have to enjoy berry flavors in your coffee
right.
to enjoy what we roast. But once you discover that they're in there, mm-hmm. like, it's hard not to get pulled in, I guess, and to mm-hmm. get kind of addicted into seeing, like, each bag is kind of an adventure. Mm-hmm. Like, what is this roast going to turn out like, you know, and how can we tweak it? Like, what greatness lies in this little green bean? And how do we?
So saying that, so if I get this bag of Brazilian today,
yeah,
and I want another bag in a month, is it going to be the same? Going to be different, similar, completely different?
So we're trying to have a couple coffees where you can buy it in 3 months and it's still going to taste the same. So we're going to have a couple standard yep. coffees like that.
And we've started with five that we feel like are going to kind of be our foundation, that we're going to branch out from there.
Yeah.
So we've got a Brazil, an Ethiopian, a Sumatran, a decaf Peruvian, which is organic and Swiss water process. So there's no chemicals used in decaffeination. And we've also got a Colombian. Mm-hmm. And those are all different regions that have pretty different flavor profiles.
Yeah.
So that's kind of our foundation. And I think those five coffees we'll try to keep pretty consistent.
Mm-hmm. And then we want to start bringing in some more of the micro lot.
Single estate.
Yeah, single estate. More, not necessarily more specialty, but just unique and different.
Yep.
And then those will be more of a...
kind of per season.
Yeah, a limited thing we offer. Yep. And those will change quite dramatically, probably.
So on the region coffees, is that what makes it more consistent, is that it is different farms coming together for the blend? Or
what consistency really is based on the yes, some on the farm, but on the skill of the roaster.
Okay.
I feel like, because once we're out of this coffee, once this season is done, it's Elizabeth's job or our job to reach out to our importer to see what other Brazilian coffees are cupping similarly and try to roast them in a way that it's going to be. So, like, let's say we have a cafe who uses our Brazil for their espresso. You know, you want a consistent flavor profile in your espresso because that's what your customers expect. So
right.
We have to be able to do that.
So there's a talent to the roasting is what you're saying.
There is, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I've come to really enjoy about coffee is... I don't know if I want to say the inconsistency about it, but there's so much that goes into coffee that literally every cup I drink, even if it's from the same bag of coffee, could be different.
Yeah.
And as long as it's really good coffee and really excellent and it's highlighting flavors, I'm okay with it being different when I drink it. Mm-hmm. I think consistency is good in the coffee world, and we do want to be able to walk into a cafe and know what we're getting. But I've walked into a cafe before, and the barista knows me and says, hey, you're really going to like this coffee. It's not what we normally serve, but I want you to try it, you know? Or they bring in a different espresso, and they're like, look, this one's pairing really nicely with the milk, and you should try it this time because it's different than what we had last time. And as somebody who... is wants to experience coffee, that is a fun experience.
Yeah, that's exciting.
You know, and then every once in a while I'm just like, I just want a good cup of coffee.
Give me
just give me a straight good cup of coffee. I don't really care what it tastes like, you know.
Yeah.
So everything how you're just describing is totally wine, like how people talk about wine, and because it, like you said, you could have the same case of wine and every bottle might taste a little bit nuanced.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I found that to be a fun part of coffee, and it kind of creates this whole experience around it.
I think that's helped add to, in the coffee world, especially, I mean, even locally, I found a lot of roasters are really for each other. Like, we want to see each other thrive and do well because they're discovering things in coffee that we might not have. Like, I love our coffee. I drink our coffee every morning, but I also get excited about drinking coffee from other roasters.
Right.
Yeah, because as you want, well, where'd you get that? What?
How'd you roast it?
Yeah, let me. Can I taste it?
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, that's a cool thing about a niche industry is that it's really, even though it's competition, it's not competition.
Yeah.
So that being said, on the niche industry, what's your demographic?
Everybody.
We're focusing on wholesale, and we also are looking to open our own cafe.
Okay.
So I feel like we have a little bit of two different
Two different fronts.
Yeah, mm-hmm. demographics. So one being for wholesale, other coffee shops, cafes, restaurants, probably a little more on the...
Maybe a little higher end.
Yeah, higher end, or kind of like farm-to-table restaurants that are highlighting different foods. And, I mean, you can even pair coffees with food like you do right. wine. And then if you're another...
And someone that's going to actually brew it the way you guys yeah. need yeah. it to be brewed.
We offer free training for our wholesale customers, and we'll work with them to get their coffee program where they want it. We're really passionate about you've spent so much time making your menu and making this amazing meal. Don't let someone end your meal with a bad cup of coffee. Like, yeah. that's the worst idea. So, yeah, I mean,
the watered-down coffee pot that's been sitting there for half the night.
Yeah, right. Watered-down or burnt. That's oof.
Yeah. No. So right now, do you have any wholesale?
We have a few people who are had been buying coffee as we had it available.
Okay.
But we just got our roaster installed.
Okay.
So I think even this week, a few of those will really start.
One of the cool things about like other roasters and even small businesses, I feel like Dagger Mountain, they're a roastery out in Valparaiso, and they've become our friends over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And so since January, about once a month, they've let us come out and roast some coffee on their roaster out there.
That's cool.
Which has just been awesome, just the support we've had from them. So they knew our roaster was being shipped and getting installed and all that. So it helped us get started and kind of get a little product out there before we really had ours installed and going. So, but it did create this kind of, we didn't necessarily always have
We weren't really pursuing
available.
Wholesale clients
gotcha.
Really hard right. because we wanted to know that we had
You wanted to be able to deliver.
Supply.
Yeah. So now that ours is installed, we're moving forward with those.
Yeah, we're
people
who
have expressed interest.
Yeah. We're our roaster lives at in Dyer at Windmill Brewing. It's just off 30, just south of 30 near the hospital there. And it's been super fun working with brewers.
Mm-hmm.
I've got it's kind of this really fun environment. So in the morning we all drink coffee. In the afternoon we all try the new brews.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So the cafe, is that like future, or is that like short term future?
Hopefully just future.
Okay.
Yeah.
We having a place for a roaster has allowed us to be a little bit picky about our location for a cafe, which we really, we're passionate about community and we want to create a space for people. And so we don't want just anything. No. So
the search has started is what
the
you're saying?
Yeah, it's going.
It's still going.
Yeah.
So. But if you're looking for the right space, you can't rush it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what
we
think.
So switching gears a little bit
yeah.
to the business side of all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Either one of you had business experience before?
Nope.
I used to babysit.
Okay.
So my dad is a small business owner, so I've learned a lot from him.
Okay.
I've helped manage cafes and kind of been in the coffee industry long enough to understand the business side of it a little bit.
Okay.
But this is the first business I've owned.
So in the short time that you guys have been doing it, any big pitfalls that you've come across on the business side of things yet?
I don't know about pitfalls.
Things take a while in business.
Yeah.
Like even just getting our roaster installed, getting a retail location. I think our timeline might have been a little optimistic.
Yeah.
And
I'm sure the budget, too.
Yeah, well, some. Yeah. We,
because we didn't have a location, we didn't have any bills, really. So
minimal expenses.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is helpful.
Yeah. I do think that's been one of my biggest frustrations is, I don't know, frustration, but unexpected
things. The timeline thing?
Yeah. I mean, people told me about it, but I was like, I can make things happen. Like, you know, it can't be that hard.
Yeah.
And then you realize, oh, I have to send an email to this person, and then they have to email somebody or make a couple phone calls, and then maybe in a week they'll get back to me. And
yeah.
And then they ask me a question, which I was hoping for an answer from them, you know, and now I have to go and do some more research.
Yeah, there's a lot more back and forth than...
Mm-hmm.
So things are usually 3 months down the road from where I usually pegged them.
Yeah.
And that's usually pretty good at trying to, like, help me see that it's going to take a lot longer. She's always... I'm like, we'll have that done in a week, and she'll be like, maybe a month.
Yeah.
The voice of reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's the anything's possible. And I'm like, oh, no, wait a minute.
Yeah. Within reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you really start, you said October, November is when you really get started.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like before
that's when
we
signed our official papers, actually.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say January is when we started roasting and actually selling bags. And we started doing events. We had
markets this summer.
Yeah, and then markets this summer. So.
So before that October, November, when it was official, like how long in the planning stage was it? Was it a short time, long time?
I would say a good year of actual planning.
Mm-hmm.
But even before that, we would have a lot of conversations just about just more of the dreaming conversations of.
And then it got down.
Why are we doing this?
How are we going to make this happen? How much is it going to cost?
And then the how easy was it to find the source?
The source
for the coffee.
You know, Elizabeth had some pretty, like, awesome roasting experience, which sourcing is a huge part of that. And so she brought a lot of that knowledge to the table, and I don't think it's been too bad. It's something that we want to grow with. We have really great importers, like you said, but we would love to also develop those direct relationships with farmers, which we've already started doing. It's just you have to order a good chunk of coffee to order direct, and we're not there yet.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Next year.
Yeah. Yeah. Elizabeth thinks next month, but
I worked at Higher Grounds Trading Company up in Traverse City, Michigan, which is where I learned most of my roasting knowledge. And they were awesome and kind of let me ask all the questions I wanted and kind of saw some of the green buying. So unroasted coffee is called green beans. Which
not
is
to be confused with green beans.
So it's called green buying.
Yeah.
So I got to kind of see a lot of the different elements of kind of the roasting, what a roastery would look like, which is how we're starting our business.
Yeah.
So I think that helped me, or helped us once we got going to.
Yeah,
we don't use the same importers, but no.
Just understanding
it gave me
the
a little
process,
experience.
The mentor relationship kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So bad. I don't mean to keep going back to your cafe.
Yeah.
So what's your vision for it? Like, are you going to be able to watch you roast them in the cafe?
Yeah. So our ultimate vision would be we have a place for the roastery would be in the back, so you'd have an area for roasting and bagging our beans back there, and then the front of the house would be the cafe. You can order drinks and we'd also like to have gardens connected with that. So whether that's we're using the produce from the gardens or the berries we're growing in, different things we're making in the cafe, or
pastries
even
pastries and such,
having some sort of CSA type box for people to come pick up.
That's like down the line a little bit, but
that's all right. The vision,
That's the big vision. I spent 2 or 3 years farming, and the whole local food, sustainable movement really got into my blood. So having the opportunity to serve someone an amazing cup of coffee paired with something that you grew, it's just too good to pass up. So in all of that, we would want the space to be a a training facility for our wholesale customers, and probably also do cuppings and such there for our retail clients. Once people learn to really taste coffee, that's
they're in. So is Northwest Indiana the place for all that?
We think it will be.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
I would sum up who we are overall in two words. It'd be excellence without pretension, which I think that's the hang up for a lot of people there. You know, you tell them about the precision and it immediately they think it's snooty or it's high end or whatever. And we just want to do things really well. You know, it doesn't have to be snooty. And I think that you'll get that small town vibe with the without losing that precision, consistency, excellence.
I would say another thing we want to do with the space is, I think, kind of like she's saying, create an atmosphere of learning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of the snottiness can come from, well, I know more about this than you do, and I'm not going to tell you, but you're wrong in what you're doing, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not going to help you.
Right.
I'm not going to help you get better, you know, or I'm not going to help you enjoy that cup of coffee. So education in the sense of, like, we just want to share what we know. Like, we've come to really enjoy coffee and
here's how you do it.
And really good produce, you know.
Really good food.
Yeah, and this is how that can happen. And then just also an environment of life, I guess. And where people can actually be having conversation and community, I guess.
Yeah.
Sometimes it feels hard to actually connect with people, and or even just finding a safe place to do that. So we want to be able to create that in the environment of the cafe.
Yeah. A lot of small business owners and people who need a place to meet with clients or moms. I mean, we want our cafe to be a safe place for young folks as well. It's not just for old people.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. So book, podcast, any seminar that you've done recently, anything that's given you some big aha moments?
I've just recently finished reading a book called So Good They Can't Ignore You.
Okay.
And it's basically just talking about, well, his main thing is don't necessarily pursue what you're passionate about. Just get good at something and you'll become passionate about that. Which is one thing I think I found in coffee. I in high school, I was drinking gas station cappuccinos from the Speedway on Ridge, you know? And I wasn't passionate about coffee at all, but one of my first jobs was also in a coffee shop. And just over the years, I just keep ending up in coffee shops, but not necessarily because I really enjoyed coffee, you know, or I was super passionate about it. I would just say within the last few years have I actually become super passionate about it, you know. But that's because I've gotten good at it.
Right.
And it's something I've come to enjoy and been able to experience. So
I like that concept. Because I have a sophomore in high school right now, and everybody asks him all the time, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Yeah. Well, he's about to turn 15. He doesn't know.
Yeah.
Until
like
you
they
get
don't
good
even
at...
really know what they're passionate about, you know. Like
right.
It takes a while to
right.
I feel like learn that about yourself.
Then you get something stuck in your head that I'm really passionate about that, and then you end up doing it, and you're like, what is this?
Yeah.
So you really do have to get to do it and like it before you can get the love of whatever it is.
Yeah.
Cool. So outside business, what do you guys do for fun?
Fun. You know, that's actually one of the things I've found that's been a little bit challenging for me is work-life balance. A lot of the business stuff is fun to me. So
there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, you look disappointed at that.
People are like, you know, stop working. Like, take it easy. Get your eyes out of the computer, you know? But yeah, I enjoy it. So, usually if I'm not doing work stuff, fun stuff looks like connecting with friends. I'm a big outdoors person, so getting outside. I just went on a vacation with my parents and my sisters in northern Minnesota, fishing, that kind of thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
And back to the whole work life, like relationships is the business. So yeah. If you're making relationships, not necessarily working, but you're working. Like,
true.
So the blend, like, I don't like the term work-life balance.
Yeah.
Like, because there, it, sometimes you're going to be all work, sometimes you're going to be all not work. So
yeah.
It's not a 50-50 thing, definitely.
Yeah, it's not for me.
No. Anyway. Yeah, right. How about you?
I'd say a little bit of the same. I'm an outdoors person, hiking, and I love large bodies of water. So
any like being on top of them or in them?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah, just water. I love water. So,
okay.
Any chance I can get to be around water, I usually am. And then reading.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds kind of boring to some people, but
no.
With a cup of coffee.
Yes, always.
Learning is definitely important. Cool. So anything that we didn't touch on that you guys want to talk about?
I would say just how folks can get a hold of us if they want to.
We'll get to that. Anything else?
I would say next.
I think for me, one thing, kind of back to that excellence but not snottiness, is that we really like our coffee black. And we would prefer that you drink it black, but ultimately we want you to enjoy your cup of coffee because that's
and we'll
what this is all
that.
About. Like, so if you want to put cream and sugar in it, or even some funny like peppermint mocha creamer,
you're
like,
not going to be hanging anybody for that.
We're perfectly fine with that if that's what it takes for you to enjoy your cup of coffee.
Yeah.
So, but we always do recommend at least try it. Black first and then add all your whatever you need to add to it.
We need to get an actual statistic, but I think it's something like 69-64 maybe on a bad day percent of people who try our coffee immediately switch to drinking it black.
That's good.
You think it's higher? You think it's more like 75?
I don't know if I don't know if I could give it a rating.
Well, it's definitely I not bitter, and I think that's what people sometimes think of coffee in their head, that coffee's bitter.
Yeah.
So I need to dilute it with sugar and cream and all the other stuff. So
your
coffee is very smooth.
Thank you.
Yeah. Cool. If that's it, we can wrap up and tell us how to get a hold of you. Best way.
Best way. Our website. It's really easy to remember. Smalltown.coffee.
Dot coffee.
Yep. It's a thing.
That's cool.
It is. Yeah. I've seen it.
Smalltown.coffee. And then we're at Wednesday nights at the Highland Music and Market from 4 to 8. And on Saturdays, Saturday mornings, 8 to 1, we're in Homewood at their market.
Cool.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Come talk to us. We've got whole bean coffee. You can try a sample of our brewed coffee. We have cold brew.
Our roaster's at Windmill Brewing in Dyer. So we're also there every once in a while.
Yeah, you might catch
at least once a week or so, you might see us roasting in there.
Yeah.
Cool.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. All right. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having
us.
You enjoyed it?
Cool.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I did.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
Thanks.